Mini episode 1014 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1014. You've got two FDH Lounge dignitaries with you here today, Rick Morris and Ben Hsu. And this is a fun segment that we do. We have, most years that this list has been out, we have put together a show to evaluate it. It's the FDH NBA Top 30 Players in the NBA for the year 2018. And, of course, this always appears in Pro Hoops Draftology over the summer before the NBA draft, as well as Fantasy Hoops Draftology coming up in the fall here. This is decidedly a non-fantasy list. I mean, there's a lot of bleed over, obviously, between the two. There's a lot of crossover. If you're great in fantasy, you're probably going to show up very high on this list. But it's not a complete type of crossover in that way. The criteria is this: if you're starting a team, a season is starting tomorrow, who would be the guys in order that you would want on your team? 1 through 30, it's 32 for the NFL, 30 for the NBA. We do it as an average of one player per team. And over the years, this list has gotten a lot more competitive to be on. I think back in years past, Ben, where there's guys like, and I know he's not the same today as what he was a couple of years ago, and I know the league has changed in ways that have sort of mitigated against his game, but a guy like Rudy Gay, I distinctly remember being at the bottom part of the list a couple of years back, and he was not even on the close cut for making the list this time. With the influx of young talent into the league, I think it's getting to be more and more competitive just for being in the top 30, as witnessed by the fact that Kevin Love's not on the list this year, and he's been on in the past.
Right, and I think especially if you look over the history of the NBA, there's always transitional periods very similar in 1984 and 1996 to where you have a glut of really good young players coming into the league, and some of them will always, just by the law of averages, be much better than we all expect, or some will be what we do expect. So I think, you know, we go through these transitional years, and I think this was definitely one of them.
I think we're in that as well. It really makes it interesting. You look at the guys who fell off the list from 2017, you've got a lot of fairly obvious cases, I think you would say, not least of which, no bigger one than Isaiah Thomas, 14 a year ago, nowhere to be found this year, not even close to making the list with the kind of year that he had. LaMarcus Aldridge, 22, off the list again. Andrew Wiggins, 26. Kevin Love, 27, who I think might have been the toughest cut of the bunch, but even he wasn't necessarily that tough of a cut, and that's me being completely honest because he's my favorite player. Carmelo Anthony, 28. Rudy Gobert, 29. Deion Waiters, 30. It's really hard to make that strong a case for any of the guys that were on the list in 2017 and aren't there this year, Ben.
Right, and I tend to agree. The only player I would think on the list that would probably even really deserve any consideration to being in the top 30 was LaMarcus Aldridge. But due to the Kawhi Leonard saga in San Antonio and how they kind of performed going into the playoffs, it's not really super hard to see why he was left off the list this year.
Exactly. And when you look at the way that the league is evolving and you look at the expectation that even big men are going to be able to shoot and have a lot of range, as witnessed by Mo Bamba's pre-draft workouts, I look at a guy like Rudy Gobert at 29. He does so much well, but that's a guy that I think is not going to be a fixture on a list like this unless he improves his shooting, if not his outside game, at least his mid-range game. In this day and age, just being a defensive stopper, you've got to be super, super, super elite, and he is pretty close to that, but that alone won't get you on a top 30.
No, I don't think so as well. I mean, it feels like, especially with young players coming into the game, and we've talked about the AAU circuit, we've talked about high school basketball, pushing power forwards and centers to shoot threes. You're going to, at least in the next 4 to 5 years, if that's not a required skill set for a big, it's going to become a required skill set for a big. A lot of the teams that are doing well, they have have big men that can play Houston as Clint Capella. The Warriors have their rotating door of guys like Jordan Bell and Draymond Green. You have a lot of really good, young, talented big men coming in on this draft class with Mo Bamba and DeAndre Ayton. So you're seeing the change already happen, and you also see the movement towards positionless basketball. So I think they have a very good, I think overall a lot of centers who are currently in the league are going to have to pull a la Marc Gasol and work on their three-point shooting or stretch the floor ability, because if you're not able to stretch the floor, that means the defense does not have to commit another defender to you.
I agree completely. That's the way the league is going, and for better or for worse, again, Steve Kerr, Golden State, with what they started to implement in 2014, having a lot to do with that, with the evolution of the game. We'll take this list. We'll go and we'll start it in groups of 10. We'll start from 30 back to 21. And the commonality on this is that, again, as you go back, there are going to be two players in this group that were not on the list a year ago. Most of these guys were on this list, but a little bit higher last year. And they didn't necessarily do much wrong in terms of slipping. I think it's just a thing where there are certain points in time in any sport where if you're standing still, you're going backwards, and that's kind of what this is right now in the NBA. If you really didn't make a leap over where you were a year ago, you're going to kind of move backwards a little bit, and that's what we're seeing. At number 30, and it's interesting because I think this is a guy that did make something of a leap, but he falls seven spots back. He was 23 a year ago. DeMar DeRozan did improve his shooting. He's a little bit more of a full-fledged modern two than he was a year ago, but still not quite there. That's part of the reason that he was available in Toronto and subsequently will be in San Antonio next year. DeMar DeRozan from 23 to 30 this year. Gordon Hayward really didn't play hardly at all last year. 24th a year ago, 29th this year. I would say the slippage is probably mostly just due to wondering with the severity of the injury, is he going to be back 100% on opening day? Doesn't seem to be much reason to doubt that, but as is always the case, you want to see it with your own two eyes. Kyle Lowry, 28. He was 17th a year ago. Again, didn't do much to necessarily slip, but certainly the way that Toronto has gone in the playoffs the last couple of years has kind of done him no favors, but still a worthy top 30 player. 27, John Wall. He was 12th a year ago. Spent some time being injured this past year, and again, for a guy who was supposed to be one of the dominant players of the 2010s, for a guy who's been an all-star a couple of times, it just hasn't unfolded the way a lot of people would have expected. 26, Bradley Beal, he was 18th a year ago. Kind of a little bit of the same story there, is that Washington is just at sort of a plateau in the Eastern Conference, which has been winnable the last couple of years, let's face it, at least as far as moving further than they have, and some of that has to fall on Beal and Wall, as talented as they are. 25, Jimmy Butler, 16th a year ago. This is another guy where, again, the fact that he doesn't really stretch the floor that much puts something of kind of a ceiling on his value at this point. Number 24, Nikola Jokic in Denver. And you look at his passing out of the post and how great he has been in that way, really the playmaker in the Denver offense. And again, a thing that is rare to see as far as the skill set that he has some great offense as well. 23, Devin Booker, not on the list a year ago, just like Jokic. Making that jump on, he looks like he's going to be on the list for a long time to come. Great pure scorer. 22, C.J. McCollum, 25th a year ago. He's a guy who, again, has made some advances in his game, continued to get better. One of the prisms he's viewed through, as with many of these players, Portland, kind of a disappointment in the playoffs this past year. They've hit a plateau, and you would know about that very well, Ben, being out there. So C.J. McCollum, a fixture kind of these days in the high 20s. The low to mid-20s, I should say. Paul George, 13th a year ago, 21st this year. And again, somebody who went backwards a little bit in terms of value because you look at, again, how it went in Oklahoma City. It was kind of a tough pairing with those couple of guys there. Still a lot of value on him, but if you're starting a team, some of the guys in the teens I take ahead of him, obviously, because of the upside that they have. So, again, for a lot of these guys, Ben, it's not necessarily much that they did wrong in terms of slipping. It's just the perception on them in terms of their upside and in terms of how it compares to some of the younger players who've come into the league and emerged onto the list.
Right, and especially we saw the big shift in Eastern Conference. conference even before the free agency period, of teams like Boston and Philly looking like the possible dynastic timelines of the Eastern Conference. And also, I mean, we all know, especially with Hayward's situation, he ended up getting injured. A lot of these guys who were on the list, it's just predicated on playoff performance. And for young guys like Devin Booker and Nikola Jokic, just getting into the playoffs. And I'm pretty sure, at least for Denver in their upcoming season, barring an absolute collapse, they should be in the top 8 seeds out in the West. And Phoenix, considering how that team was built with Dean and Mikal Bridges in the draft, they're going to be much better this year. And it would not shock me if one of these weird scenarios play out where a couple teams that we think will get in don't get in, and teams like Philly and Denver get in instead.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go a step further than that. I look at Denver.
I mean, excuse me, Phoenix and Denver.
That's right. Yeah,
Phoenix.
Anyway,
right, so.
Yeah. Good. Good thing you caught that there. With Denver, I gotta say, this is one of these things where, and I know it's possible to overstate what I'm talking about with them. Certainly, as a Cavs fan, I have my concerns about their chemistry with Isaiah Thomas being a volume shooter being there. It's been good balance in terms of a lot of the guys there in terms of scoring. So I have some concerns about what that might do to the ecosystem. But if I'm wrong in my concerns, and he is a boon to Denver overall, am I wrong for saying Denver might not just make the playoffs, but they got a chance to be as high as the 4 seed and get home court in the first round?
Well, I think a lot of people think it's almost a foregone conclusion in the Northwest Division that OKC is going to win. But again, they did have their struggles last year, and Portland ended up winning the division over OKC.
Yeah.
So at this point, I would tend to lean away from any sort of big Denver prediction, but it would not shock me to see them in the top four of the West, or a scenario where they go deep enough into the playoffs that they could make it to the conference finals if certain things shake out.
Yeah, they have that kind of upside, and they are deeper in their starting lineup and in their rotation than are most teams. So they're going to be something worth keeping an eye on. For me, Utah would be the early favorite in that division, but you've got a couple of tough contenders there. That is one of the toughest, if not the toughest, divisions in basketball to win the regular season championship. Going from 20 to 11 on the list, couple guys here that we're going to start off with who weren't on the list a year ago because they weren't in the NBA a year ago. Well, one of them was, but hadn't done anything yet. Ben Simmons, number 20, coming in for the first time. And again, if he really had any kind of shooting depth at all at this point, if he had the ability to stretch the floor, he'd be much higher than this. He's going to have to add that to his game, and I wouldn't bet against him, but he's going to have to add it if he's going to move much higher than this in the modern NBA. Number 19, Jason Tatum. I have to say, a guy who really proved me wrong. I didn't really think much of his ceiling a year ago, and the way that he came in and helped carry Boston to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals when they were a team depleted of their top two stars, at least on paper. Jason Tatum looks like the guy that Boston is building around for the long term here, and again, my hat's off to him for proving me wrong. Number 18, Karl-Anthony Towns, 21 a year ago. The personification, I would say, of that modern center, of everything you're looking for in your modern big man. Number 17, Donovan Mitchell, obviously not on the list a year ago. You talk about proving me wrong, really the case. I didn't think he had much of an upside coming out of college. You and I have talked about some things with him and about that he might have been held back a little bit by the Louisville system, but he has just been amazing to watch develop. Number 16, Draymond Green, 11th a year ago. And again, a really, as much as I, as a Cavs fan, dislike him personally, one of the foremost glue players in the NBA, as far as if you have a couple stars around him, he is a guy who can help make things more cohesive and just lift that team in another kind of a way. So you don't want him as your one star or your two, but if you got those taken care of, he's going to fit better with them than arguably players who are more talented. Number 15, Damian Lillard, 19th a year ago. He, like C.J. McCollum, has sort of been in a certain range on the list here, and so he is at this point. Number 14, Victor Oladipo. And again, you talk about, this has been the motif of these 10 guys proving me wrong. I had no idea of his upside a year ago. You, Ben, pointed that out to me, that he was never going to get to be the volume kind of a guy that he was in Indiana playing with Russ Westbrook. And again, Indiana looks like they won that deal going away. And a guy that they can build around, and has just been amazing in his first year in Indiana as the guy who was the center of the franchise. Speaking of centers, number 13, Joel Embiid, not on the list a year ago. That guy, when healthy, you talk about the modern center. Again, you know, like Towns, the personification of it. And again, when healthy, that's always the question with this guy. But he's starting to get to the point now where there's been enough distance since his last big injury to where you can kind of relax a little bit. Speaking of centers and injuries, number 12, DeMarcus Cousins. This was one of the toughest ones to place, number 8 a year ago. Since the list came out, and of course this was put together in June, we are now in August. So I will say this in fairness to me, a little more of a sense on what the time frame might be, which is potentially around the All-Star break. But had he signed with a team other than Golden State that's not feeling any urgency whatsoever, the comeback could have been on an earlier timetable. So even if he comes back in February, that's not to say that it couldn't necessarily have been earlier had he signed with another team, if that makes any sense. So you factor in the locker room stuff with him, you factor in his availability or lack thereof for the first part of the season, and that's how great he still is in terms of his skill set, that he would be as high as number 12. Although, again, Achilles injury, big man, we'll have to see how long it takes him to get back to 100%, if ever. Number 11 is the Greek Freak. He was 15th a year ago, continues to take strides. If he's on the top tier a year from now, it wouldn't surprise me. There's so much that he does well. Again, the ability to, let's say, consistently stretch the floor as opposed to intermittently. That's one of the last things that you're waiting to see here with him. But a guy as big as he is who can handle the ball like a point guard, truly, truly just an amazing all-around player and very deserving of his nickname. So those are the guys from 20 to 11, Ben, peppered in with a lot of very, very young talent, a lot of very high-ceiling talent.
Right, and I think overall, too, especially with a lot of the young big men in today's league, it was ironically enough because during the early Golden State run, there was a lot of questions in terms of, well, are we ever going to need big guys ever again? Because just with the ability that Golden State has to spread the floor, most of the time people are like, well, we don't really need a big skill big guy. We just need an athletic big guy. And now it's getting to the point where the death of the center narrative was completely overblown, because now in the top 20 of at least this list, you have at least three or four of the marquee centers in the league today. And on top of that, too, you're just going to have to look at just pure growth of the youthful talent in the NBA, the just pushing the league forward. And again, like I noted in an earlier mention, this seems like a transitional year. And when the transitional years usually happen, a bunch of guys usually break out onto the scene. And this seems to be the case in this scenario, too. Yep. I will note, though, I still think in this case, even though Giannis is at 11, I still have him at higher on the list.
Okay.
Only because of the based on pure talent and athleticism alone. But I will agree with you that at times, especially last season, after seeing him in Portland one game and then the boon of how Milwaukee kind of slipped up going into the playoffs, there needs to be some form of consistency with him overall.
Absolutely. You are right about that. And that is one of the things that's kept him from being a little higher on the list. But I expect him to be a fixture in the top 10 for most, if not all, of the next decade. Before we start at number 10 here, we'll go 10 to 6 because the first tier starts at number 5. There's a top tier 1 through 5. The second tier is 6 through 30 on the list because that was how we had it bunched up. Before we start with Kyrie Irving at number 10, I want to get to a note about the Cavs' new point guard, Colin Sexton, the new guy that they're building around. And I have to tell you, the other list that I recorded recently here, of course, Chris Galloway and I doing our NFL Top 32 list, he was evaluating the FDH list there. And I had mentioned to him off air, I was talking to him about this. I said, this is a sign, perhaps, that I have watched too much in the way of sports. I was telling him about our off-air conversation and a lot of the stuff we've talked about with Colin Sexton, and that you at one point made a reference to the skill set, but basically a much more idealized version of the relatively obscure 90s point guard Robert Pack. I said, you know what? I knew exactly what Ben was talking about. I've probably watched too much sports. And Chris texts me back, that is an amazing reference. So I guess he's watched too much sports also. We both knew what you were talking about, Ben.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think that would be too different of a narrative.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that always shifts the narrative that Robert those guys. And, you know, I think he kind of gets lost on those early 90s Denver teams. But you have to remember that he was really a good player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and I knew exactly what you were talking about, because he's got the same kind of explosiveness as Colin Sexton. But again, I think Sexton at a higher level. I know you've also compared him a little bit to Payton when you factor in the intensity of a Gary Payton. So that's a pretty nice hybrid here if we're talking about the best elements of some of these guys, Ben.
Right, that's definitely the case. And Cleveland, I know this year, there probably is going to be a down year for them. But they're going to be much more competitive than people think. And I still think, considering the East is still the East at this point with LeBron going to the Lakers, I would not be shocked if they somehow find their way into the playoffs, especially if Sexton puts together a rookie of the year campaign.
Totally agree in the weak East, but something that, again, I'm not necessarily, I would say I'm not rooting for, just because we'll lose the draft pick to Atlanta. And I think this team needs one more high draft pick going forward, even if, as we've talked about previously, if Billy Preston somehow works his way into it. But the guy who started, how's this for putting a burden on him, who started the crumbling of the past incarnation of the Cavs, talk about looking at the glass half empty as far as half full, though, because he's the guy who hit the game-winning shot to win the 2016 title. But in 2017, after the season, he demanded a trade. He went to Boston. Kyrie Irving, number 10 on the list, 9 a year ago. Staying as high as he is on pure talent, on upside, the ability to, he's never had a chance to really carry a team and make it a really good team. It didn't happen for his first couple of years in Cleveland, but he was on a good track in Boston, obviously, until he got hurt. The injuries are the main reason I don't have him higher. He'd be bumping up against the top of the second tier were it not for the fact that this guy's had a lot of knee injuries right now, and you got to wonder what you're going to get. But particularly with him being in a contract year, Kyrie Irving is definitely still a top 10 guy. Number 9, Russell Westbrook, 4th a year ago. Again, a superlative year on paper, but I think, again, and this is a controversial take from people who just want to look at the triple-doubles, but to me the bloom is off the rose for this guy as far as being a winner, because, again, you look at what's happened, and you pointed it out to me, Ben, that as players have gotten away from him, Victor Oladipo is just the most obvious and visible example of that. But players don't tend to get better when they're playing with Russ. And as talented as he is, that's why I don't have him higher on the list. He'd been on the top tier previously. He's not now. Number 8, Chris Paul. He was 20th a year ago. And this is a guy where, again, there's a lot of city miles on this guy. So I think me having him 20 a year ago, I think I'm always just expecting maybe there's going to be a drop-off here at some point. And in terms of what he is physically, there probably is a little bit of that. You're not going to be that machine that you were forever. But as he's gotten smarter, he's kind of done the whole LeBron kind of a thing, that he's added more to his game in a cerebral kind of a fashion. And playing with James Harden really tended to revitalize him. Number 8 on the list. Number 7, Klay Thompson, 10th a year ago. It's funny because he's been in more or less the same spot the last couple of years. And I think it was 2 years in a row he was just one spot behind Kyrie Irving. And you look at Kyrie falling a little bit because of the injury question. Same thing with DeMarcus Cousins, who was just ahead of him. Klay Thompson, it's sort of the opposite of guys in the 20s who fell a little bit, not because they necessarily did anything wrong, but guys emerged in front of them. Klay Thompson, to me, is more or less the player he was a year ago. He's just a little higher because a couple of the guys in front of him kind of slipped on a banana peel a little bit. Number 6, Kawhi Leonard, 5th a year ago. The major difference is he's not on the top tier right now because, again, to a certain extent where his head is at with everything that's gone on with him in the last year, but also, again, physically, is there more wrong with this guy than most of the doctors have tended to indicate? And the answer is probably no, but you know what? The last guy who I remember there being this big of a controversy about was Derrick Rose. So whether Derrick Rose was right at the time or not, that he was worse physically than the doctors tended to know, all I know is it was all downhill for his career from there. So I tend to believe Kawhi Leonard is pretty much back to 100%. I wouldn't have him as high on the list as I didn't otherwise, but he's not in the top tier just because I can't put him in the top tier after a year like he had. There's just those lingering questions there that he himself has fueled. So from 10 to 6, a very interesting, very by and large backcourt-oriented group of players.
Right, and it's also interesting, too, that these are still a lot of the elite players, but it still feels that maybe outside of Chris Paul, everyone kind of of just backslid a little bit just based off playoff success and just overall issues with health in their season, overall. But it's always interesting, especially when you see a big shift of a lot of these young guys coming into the league playing well. And then you see some of the old guards start to slip back a little bit. And just to get to the narrative, with especially with Paul and Westbrook, the question for them moving forward is playoff success again. And despite, you know, Paul putting in a gutsy effort in that Western Conference Finals, it's still going to be seen that his body betrayed him at the end of that series. And if they had gone to the NBA Finals, I think a lot of the doubt that a lot of people had about Chris Paul would have been changed in terms of just overall playoff success. And with the whole Russell Westbrook situation now, is that we're going to see, because this seems to be the first real year after Harden and Durant have left, where he's had another premier player alongside him in Paul George that will possibly allow him to grow as a player. The real question is ultimately going to be is, will Billy Donovan be able to figure out an offense that will keep Westbrook happy and making him mobile and doing all the things that he does well? Or eventually, is we just going to defer back into Russ mode? And we've already seen, just based off statistics alone, Russ mode does not work.
That's true. That's absolutely right. And as we start the top tier here, I want to get into a very definitional sense with you, because to me, the NBA is the most clear-cut of any of the four sports in this sense, because we do these lists, and I think that's what distinguishes the FDH Lounge. We do these for all four of the major North American sports. The top tier in this list has the clearest definition in my estimation, and that is, if you're on the top tier, a team can win a championship with one of these players as their best player. And again, that hasn't happened with all of these players on the list, as we will get to. But in terms of winning a championship in the NBA, unless you are going to be one of those outliers like the 2004 Pistons, and those don't come along very often, you have to have a player who's on the top tier of players in the NBA. So that's the whole thing here, too. In terms of this line, in terms of guys who are just below that, they're guys who haven't ascended to that yet, Ben. The guys who are above this line, and there are there's a player here that we're going to start the list with who just got above the line this past year. That's the whole thing, is that to be on the top tier in the NBA, that's the definition right there in my estimation. A team can win with you as its best player, go all the way.
Right, and especially in this day and age of teams with multiple superstars, it's going to be even harder to make these initial thoughts on who will be the top five best players in the coming years, too.
It will be, definitely so. Number five, he didn't advance very far in terms of numbers because he was already high on the list at number seven last year, but the key thing is he got above the line this year, and he is going to stay above the line so long as he stays 100%. The brow, Anthony Davis, really showing in New Orleans, and again, looking better than ever once DeMarcus Cousins went down. So showing that the Twin Towers system actually wasn't working for him, and in some odd kind of ways, maybe was even kind of holding him back. Anthony Davis, number five. Number four, Steph Curry, number three a year ago. He's always bouncing around right in these spots here. And what's interesting to me is that he's behind somebody on the list who, in terms of a best pure player, I take the other guy over him. But as far as the definitional player who makes Golden State go, who might be the most valuable to me it's Curry, because essentially he and to whatever extent Klay Thompson were the architects of the system. It was built around their skill set. So I don't have him as high as another player on the list, but I think he's more important to Golden State because they won a championship without that other guy. Than the other guy is. And everybody obviously knows who I'm talking about. But before we get to him, number three, James Harden, number six a year ago. And again, going to another level in Houston this year with Chris Paul right there. People want to talk about LeBron as the MVP, and you could make a very good case for it, but it's hard to argue against James Harden as well. That other guy I was referring to a minute ago, unsurprisingly, Kevin Durant, number two, second a year ago. I think in the eyes of a lot of people, the consensus second best player in the world, even if in some kind of odd way, even if people agree with me that Steph Curry is actually marginally more important to Golden State. It's just funny because you can get into different criteria in terms of talking about top players. Number one, no big surprise here. He's been number one, I think, just about since we've been doing the list. When we started it, I think in 2014, if not a little earlier. But LeBron James, again, number one. Unfortunately for me, moving away from my Cleveland Cavaliers out to Los Angeles, a lateral move at best in terms of surrounding talent, although you could look at Brandon Ingram, who's got some upside here, and if he starts to reach that upside, then you would take the Lakers roster arguably above the Cavs roster. But, again, interesting that he is obviously settling in for an extended project as far as building a team and trying to catch up to where Golden State is at. But he has the capacity to elevate any team in the league exponentially. You look at what he did with the Cavs in the first year, where they went from complete garbage to game six of the NBA Finals. The same will not happen here. The Lakers were not garbage last year, but a young team that wasn't quite putting it together, has some talent in different places. An odd looking roster right now with the players that they've added, to be sure. He'll elevate them into the playoffs. A lot of people are saying top four seed. I don't know if I believe that, but he'll elevate them into the playoffs. It may be one of the earlier exits of his playoff career. It may be the first time he doesn't even make it out of the first round. That would be an interesting part to his legacy, because he's had that over Jordan to this point. But as far as elevating the players around him, as far as the all-around skill set, everything that he brings, and what I said about Chris Paul before applies that much more to him, that he's actually, I think he had his best season ever this past year. That, and you look at it, I mean, in terms of his athleticism, and again, this is a guy who spends seven figures a year on his body, but in terms of his athleticism, he's maybe, what, 90 to 95% of what he used to be, but the cerebral part of the game. He came into the league basically a PhD about basketball, and he's only grown from there. So the curve of knowledge has exceeded the curve of loss of athleticism. And as long as that's still the case, he could have potentially even a better year this next year. He's not going to keep improving that much as he gets to 34, 35, but he's at least putting off the downside. And if you're looking at it for one season coming into this here, there is no doubt, I think, in anybody's mind who is rational, that LeBron James is the guy you build a team around in today's NBA.
Right, and I don't think anyone's going to say anything different in that narrative, Rick. But I will say something that might be deemed a little more controversial than people will give me.
Okay.
I believe LeBron is the best player. I don't think anyone's going to deny you that. But I'm going to note this for the fact, I think I would rather, at this point of their careers, I would much rather have Kevin Durant at this point, just for his abilities on the court to score, be a number one option when you need him to be, play good defense in the post. At this point of their careers, I would rather have Durant's all-around capabilities than LeBron's capabilities at this point. And there's an argument you could even make that Durant is more valuable to his team overall than anybody else. There's an argument you can make that.
Yeah, and let's stay on that, because by definition, yeah. Then, by definition, you are differing. You would put Kevin Durant at number one, LeBron at number two. So that is, again, you look at the I won't even say weaknesses, really, because it doesn't even really come into play. You'd be nitpicking when you're talking about guys on the top tier. But the relative strengths that they bring here. So as far as Durant's ability to take over a game on his own, that clearly is something that you seem to be, if I'm reading you right, valuing above LeBron's capacity both to do that and his capacity to make others around him better. You're saying that Durant is so blinding in terms of what he can do on the court that that's the main thing that you would take over LeBron?
I just think the only specific thing I will take over LeBron at this point is I think Durant's scoring ability.
Yes,
because
undeniable.
I think there's more ways that Durant can beat you in terms of than LeBron can beat you. Despite LeBron, I will note, last season his three-point percentage definitely went up.
Yes.
And he has improved his game tenfold in across the board. The question I ultimately have is that in today's NBA, is having one do-it-all guy more important than a guy who can at least get you those key crunch-time baskets, which Durant has shown in the last two NBA Finals that he can't do?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. All right, so let's take it a step further before we wrap this thing up.
Sure.
Durant and Curry, who do you think, do you agree with me that Curry is perhaps marginally more important to the specific Golden State team, and that that would be the exception to the rule as far as if you could only, let's say, take one player off of the team, or how do you see that?
Well, I think it's very interesting with Golden State overall, because their team has gone, we've seen, and this is why I think Steph Curry's overall career in the NBA is probably going to be the most interesting career in league history when it's all said and done. But I don't disagree with you, because I still believe just with what Curry was able to do in those two seasons, that I don't think you would argue that he's more important than Durant, because I think Durant is a bigger threat and is more of a problem for teams than it is. But Curry, essentially, I still think he has that sort of swagger about him that he can hit a 35-footer in your face every time out on the court. And that is the moral, I think, to teams. And that's what a lot of people, I think, saw when Durant eventually went to Golden State, was that the issue for Golden State at the time was that they didn't have a do-it-all big guy that could score. Like, Draymond Green was a great player, but he was not an all-around scoring threat under most circumstances. But at this point of their careers, I would say Durant by a hair, but my major issue, and I think you might agree with me, Rick, is that Stephen Curry just still has that aura about him. That if he's in a game, he can go for 30 or 40 points at will.
He does, and it's a funny thing, too. Last note that I have here on this, because you were part of the balloting that we did in the last several months for the NBA top 10 players of all time, where we were going through and making out our top 10 lists and honorable mention lists. And, again, Curry, with an incomplete career at this point, didn't score that high. He did end up in the top 25 overall, which I suppose is to be expected, but When you look at his career, I think one of the things that is going to be, and like you said, he's going to be an interesting guy to judge historically, and one of the marks that he's going to get next to him in the history books that I can't almost think of anybody else in history as far as being a transformational type player. I guess you could look at it that Bill Russell, maybe to whatever degree, well, Russell and Chamberlain more or less coming into the league at the same time, they sort of begat Kareem, who sort of begat some of the modern centers, but when you're looking at changing the overall game and everything as far as how it's played, there are so few players really that have ever done that. As dominant as Jordan was, there was Dr. J before him. He added a little better shooting than Dr. J generally had, but Curry, as far as being a guy who helped change the very texture of the game, that's going to be something that's going to weigh heavily for him in the history books.
Right, and I think one of the ironies and the one real narrative that you have to give credit to Curry's career overall is that if you look at it, he's essentially had two careers in one. Right. And outside of Will, I can't think of another player that's had that sort of narrative about them. I mean, he was the best player on arguably one of the greatest teams of all time, and now you could make the argument he's the second to third fiddle at times with the team. But he is just such a talent, and just his team is so dominant at this timeline that I think a lot of us have the question of did Curry ultimately make the right decision? Because I think his legacy and his star power could have been, because right now the one thing that you can say about Golden State Records is that they're a team and they win as a team and they win titles as a team, but I think a lot of us do have to wonder if Curry doesn't get injured that often, would he have deferred to have Durant come on board at some point? And the question would be, if Curry was fully healthy this entire time, would he be the best player in the league? And at this point, you can't say that, because you're not gonna put him over Durant, who's on his own team, and you're not going to put him over LeBron. And that's why I just think what makes Curry's story that much interesting. In comparison, Wilt was a dominant scorer in the early 60s and had his own issues about winning titles, but later in his career, he changed his game. He became a rebounding and an assist guy.
Yep.
He still was able to put the ball in the basket, but he completely changed his ability. And I can't think of another player who's gone through a bigger transformation than Will outside of Curry. And the question we all have to ask is that, let's say Durant ultimately beats that team, and then Cleveland beats OKC in that NBA Finals. Durant probably never leaves. Do we see Curry and this sort of Golden State team recharge with a different player and become just as dominant or even better, and where Curry is the number one option still, no matter what?
Very possible. Possibly, yeah. I mean, my last point on this little interesting cul-de-sac we went down is you say two careers. I say three because prior to 2014, part of it was the way that he was breaking down even more at that time. But pre-Steve Kerr, he was an excellent player, an all-star, one of the best players in the league, a guy that you could comfortably slot on this top 30, but nowhere near considered being one of the greatest players of all time, much less a top-tier player today. So Steve Kerr getting there in 2014 and fully unlocking him, this is where it's really sort of the synergy, as was the case, say, Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan or that kind of thing here. Steve Kerr and Stephen Curry, the combination of them there, that ended the first act, which was more forgettable, opened up the dynamic second act, and now he's in the third act, where, as you say, arguably he's the second banana. But three careers in one, I would say.
I mean, and I think what makes this even more interesting is just the birth of the Golden State dynasty is kind of, you would say there's a lot of things that have to happen to make everything come to the culmination that we ultimately need to.
Yep.
There was, again, there's a lot of things, there's at least, I could argue, six or seven different things that had happened in the league that could have ended this Golden State dynasty before it even started. And at this point, you also have to consider all the little machinations that has happened to get Golden State to this point. And it's gotten that team to get better. One story I think a lot of people tend to forget because it was a little bit past the Golden State fan time, Joe Lacob, their owner, when he took over control of the franchise, there was a timeline. They were honoring Chris Mullin at halftime one time. And he got booed rather viciously by a Golden State fan.
Right.
And at this point, I don't know of a single Golden State fan who wouldn't give the shirt off their back for Joe Lacob at this point. And just looking at how Golden State, because I spent a lot of time in Northern California. In the early 2000s, Golden State tickets were pretty much by the bushel. It didn't matter how much money you had, you could get a Golden State Warrior ticket. And now, at this point, you're seeing people spending, you know, CEO salaries to sit courtside at this point.
Yep.
And it's incredible to see how just a couple of things created arguably one of the more dominant dynasties we've seen in the history of the league.
It is. And as somebody who both has to watch basketball games that he announces, as well as looking what happened to Golden State after he left, for two reasons, I wish Mark Jackson hadn't worn out his welcome in Golden State, Ben.
Right. I think a lot of fans are probably saying, it shows, I think, Mark Jackson's a great player, a great head coach. The problem was that he had the wrong idea. And it happens. I mean, especially in professional sports, errors are made. But at the time, I think looking afterwards, it seems very bizarre that you have Curry and Thompson, and you decided to focus on defense.
Yeah. And, you know, the commonality with the NFL Top 32 list, to bring it all the way around, we were talking about this last week, the breakout of Case Keenum, who didn't make the list, and Jared Goff, who did make the list. Jeff Fisher will never get a head coaching job at the NFL again. Looking at Curry and Thompson now, I think that's part of the reason Mark Jackson didn't get a bigger sniff in New York and some of the other places.
Right.
When you look at how guys thrive without you, it makes it hard.
But I mean, also on top of the fact, too, I think Curry blossomed into a much better player than a lot of people probably did give him credit for.
He did. He really did. No question about that. And as I've pointed out in the past, the great irony in me as a young Cavs fan going out to the Richfield Coliseum and rooting for a sharpshooter named Del Curry, who was launching those three-pointers. Oh, if I only knew what the future held back then, I wouldn't have cheered for that young player quite as much. But one never knows what the future has in store. But I do know what the future has in store in this way, and that is plenty of great hoops conversation in the FDH Lounge with you, Ben Chu, as we have had before. As was the case in the past with this list and all your other great segments, thank you so much for being on and analyzing this list and giving your thoughts on it.
So I appreciate it, Rick, and hopefully we'll be back again for yet another NBA conversation soon.
We will do that, my friend. We'll be sure to do that. I'm looking forward to it, as are a great many, I'm sure. Thank you for being a part of this today, Ben. Thank you for everybody for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 1014.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.